Good morning to everyone here. It's good to be with the saints at Amelia again. If you noticed your bulletin, Brother Jerry is supposed to be preaching this morning, but he begged his little brother in a real nice way to fill in for him while he's recuperating, so I will try for that. I would like to first thank you for your flexibility and patience in schedule and everything so that it made less traveling for us, and we're going to have council this morning and communion tonight. I don't like that arrangement on a regular basis, but thank you for being flexible and working with. Okay, now, I know we've got a lot to cover, and I'm going to try to keep the message short because I don't want to keep you here until middle of the afternoon and tell you to be back at 6. Turn to Genesis chapter 6, and I didn't realize when I thought about this that I'm walking into next Sunday school lesson. But I know that if you talk about the flood, there's plenty enough to talk about this morning and next Sunday. So if I say anything that is worth repeating next Sunday, I don't care if you repeat it. But I was thinking a lot about the flood, about Noah in particular. Last Saturday we stopped by the ark and spent a couple hours there, and that stirred up a lot of thoughts about Noah. And I would just like to think about Noah this morning for a little bit. Does anybody know who was Noah's great-grandfather? Anybody know Noah's great-grandfather? Enoch. Thank you. He was in our lesson this morning. And just very interesting. What do we know about Enoch? He walked with God. And anyway, I just want to look a little bit at the condition of the world in Noah's day. Turn to Genesis 6, verse 5. And God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, and it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, the creeping thing, the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God just like great-grandfather did. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Now here was a man that walked with God. And what in, well, we can go back, we didn't read the earlier part, but verse 2 is, there was marrying and given in marriage. Verse 5, their wickedness was great on the earth. The evil thoughts, the imaginations were only evil continually. Verse 11, there was corruption and violence. Verse 12 again, all flesh had corrupted his way. And 13, there was violence again. I wonder, did anybody think of any parallel to another time in history that all these things were like this? Yeah. Today, is there any difference today? I thought a lot about that, thinking about Noah building that ark with all this corruption around him and violence. And I wonder if anybody bothered him. Wonder if somebody stole tools from him. As I'm pretty much sure he didn't have a big fence around it, and pretty much sure that he didn't have a guard there to watch it. But now I want to look at Noah's condition. We'll go into verse 8. Noah found grace. He found favor. He found acceptance. Here, when all this wickedness, the evil imaginations, the corruption, the violence, all the degeneration, there Noah was finding favor. He was finding acceptance, beauty, something pleasant and precious in the eyes of the Lord. And that tells you a lot about the man. Because if he found all that in the eyes of the Lord, where was he looking? If I'm looking up here, I'm not looking at your eyes, right? Or if I'm looking down here, you have to be looking at the person that you're looking in their eyes. And I think that's the key to walking with God. And that's why we today can walk with God. And you can look God in the eyes, so to speak, in His Word. And that's what Noah did. He found grace in the eyes of the Lord. I want to look at Noah's condition and remember all this. If I had a normal morning, I'd probably write it on the board. But verse 9, Noah was a just man. He was right in cause. He was right in conduct. He was right in character. And he was directed by God. He was vindicated by God. I think that's what just means. He was vindicated. He was declared not guilty by God. He was perfect. I wonder what if you would describe, maybe give a definition to this being Noah being perfect. What you would describe? How about a man of integrity? Think he was? Absolutely. I believe Noah was without blemish, without spot. He was sincere. He was undefiled. He was whole. I don't believe Noah had things to hide. I don't believe he had things that he didn't want his sons to ever find out, and he was trying to hide them away under the boat somewhere. He was a man of integrity. He was faithful to his wife. What does it say there? He was a just man. He was perfect, and he walked with God. Notice that 12 and 13. I love this, reading over it. And God looked upon the earth. And remember, I know I've told you before how that in the Psalms it says that God beholds from His sanctuary. He looks down and He beholds the earth. And God was looking down and He saw the corruption that was in the earth. And He decided to go talk to Noah about it, the man that had walked with Him. Probably the only one, just about the only one left. I think Methuselah died the year of the flood. A couple of those old, probably faithful supporters of Noah, maybe while he was building. But God looked down and He saw the corruption of the earth, and He went and talked to Noah about it. The end of all flesh has come before Me. He was just tired of the violence, and He said, I'm going to destroy the earth. And then God gave Noah instructions. And verse 14 through 21, He told him what to do. Make the ark of gopher wood. And He gave him the size. And depending how you make the cubit, it's somewhere around 500. Ken Ham's ark is just a little over 500 long and 80 wide, I believe. I forget the exact height, but he must not have used the 1.5 feet for the cubits, but anyway, there's some difference on that. But anyway, a big ark, 500 long, 80 wide, and however many high. But God gave Noah the instructions, 3 floors. I am going to bring a flood of waters. Water? It had never rained. They didn't know what it was. He said, you make a boat, set it up there. And I was impressed to think the first thing he would have had to do is go out and start cutting trees to get the lumber. That's a lot of lumber. Took over 3 million board feet, the one over in Kentucky. Over 3 million. It's a lot. And Noah and his sons went to work. And what impressed me, it doesn't seem like there was any arguing. God told him exactly what to do, how big, how many stories, put a door in it, put a window in it. And God told him, build the ark. And I had to think a little bit about Noah going home and getting his wife. I think they named her over at the ark Imzira. And we know Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and getting them together and said, okay, family, God just talked to me. It's going to rain. And they're probably like, what? Rain? What's that? Well, water's going to come down. And the fountains of the deep all broke up. I remember reading that later. And we're going to build this big ark. And what happened? After all this instruction, in verse 22, thus did Noah according to all that God commanded him. So did he. I was challenged by that. Three words there, just said two different ways. Thus did Noah. So did he. The biggest assignment that probably a man has ever been given to do, a physical labor. Little assignment for you is to go figure out how long it took him to build the ark. I know most times we say 120 years. I can't get it quite to figure out like that. But if you do, you let me know. But I don't care if it was 70 years, which I think that would be my guess at this point or judgment. But it was 120 years from when God made that decree there in the first part of chapter 6. But until Shem, Ham, and Japheth seemed to be on the scene. Anyway, if you ever worked on a project for 70 years, it was a long time. We don't need to get bogged down whether it was 70 or 120. But to for 70 years or 120, whatever, for that long of a period of time, to be building an ark like a big boat without oars and propellers and sails, just something to sit that's supposed to float on dry land. There was no way in the world to move that thing. Never had rained. People scoffing. Unbelievers all around. And what does Peter call Noah? Anybody remember? Preacher of righteousness. I can just imagine Noah cutting those boards and driving those nails, whatever pitch, all that pitch. I can't imagine. He would have been, I guess one year he decided, okay, this year we're going to do pitch. And worked at pitch. But in the middle of all that, stopping and the people coming by and laughing, this man's gone crazy building all this stuff, and Noah just stopped. Judgment's coming. Well, how do you know? Well, God told me. That's all he had, was God told me. No wonder he's in the faith chapter in Hebrews 11. He did this only because God said it. Now, I would like to look at a few scriptures of what Jesus said the conditions would be in the end of the world. I guess we'll go to 2 Timothy first. Second Timothy chapter 3. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers. Tell you one thing and do something different. False accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. That's what he said would be in the last days. Back up to Romans 1. I'll just break in at 26. For this cause God gave them up into vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burn in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind, that's depraved, unprincipled mind, to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. Now, it doesn't say there that that's just conditions of the last days. But in these last days, we see these conditions. I'm going to go back to Matthew 24. Verse 37. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Did you get that? All those things we read about back here in Genesis were described the condition of society. Jesus said, as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Matthew 24, verse 46 says, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. And I just want to conclude this by reminding us that God has spoken to us. God came in a way to Noah and just talked to him. He's also come to us and talked to us. This book, the Bible, God's holy word. We know what his will is. We know, we've been told the conditions around us and the conditions that will be in the end times. We know we're here. And so the question today is, are we living like Noah? Or are we living like the society around him? But can we take what God says in his word and believe it and act upon it and take our family with us? Are we walking close enough? That impressed me with Noah. When God looked at the earth and saw how wicked it was, he decided to talk to Noah about it. And are we walking close enough to God that he can talk to us? Even if it's, through his word. And he talks to us, we can read it. And in our hearts we say, I don't want to be a part of that system. I want to walk with God. Where is your confidence this morning? This is a council service. Where is your confidence this morning? Are you finding grace in the eyes of the Lord? Is your confidence in yourself? You know, one of the things we read there in Romans was about, it was in Timothy about the people, not if I can't think of the exact wording of it, but it's so much about myself. And that is so much of society today. It's such a narcissistic society. It's all about me and my pleasures and what I want to do. And if I have fun and I. And to us as children of God, it needs to be about God. About us serving Him. Where's our confidence this morning? Or do we have things... Do we have things in place in our life, or our social life, and where I'm glad for every member in this congregation, but that's not going to get you to heaven. Where is our confidence? And you can cross your T's and dot your I's. That's not going to get you to heaven in itself. Where is your confidence? Are you walking with God? Do you enjoy fellowship with Him? Are you looking Him in the eyes? And when He speaks in His Word, does that grip your heart? Does that move your life? Does that give you what you need to make that commitment? I'm going to live that way. Have you been saved? Have you been washed by the blood of Jesus? Are you walking with Him? And so therefore, as you walk with Him, we're a part of a group that wants to make it to Zion. We want to make sure that we're reflecting the glory of Jesus. Is that the highest thing in our life? What is the basis of your salvation? Do you have peace with God this morning? Do you have peace with your fellow man? I'd like to think that old Noah had... I know he had peace with God, and I'd like to think he had peace with his fellow man as much as was possible. He disagreed with them, told them they were wrong. I think he loved them. I believe he was even telling them that it's not up to me who all comes in this boat, in this ark. God is the one that says who can come in. He was telling them that. I believe he would have allowed anybody to come in. God would have come and said, you know what, there's a neighbor down the road and I want him to get in with you. Noah would have been good with it. It wasn't up to Noah. It was up to God. And God knows your heart this morning. And I want that to just sink in. One day we'll all be standing before God. And the books will be opened, and the book, if our name isn't found in the book, will be judged out of the books. And we'll stand before Him. Do you have peace with Him? Do you have peace with your fellow man? Do you love the congregation of believers? Or do you love the church? I think that means more than just our congregation, other believers. But do you love this congregation? And do you uphold our brotherhood agreement or our discipline, our statement of faith, our decrees for to keep? Call it what you want. And you desire to commune. Have you been communing in the past? Have you been walking with God? And so because of that, you've been communing on a private level, personal level. You want to commune on a congregational level. I'm thankful this morning for salvation through Jesus, peace with God, and peace with my fellow men, the love for His children, the children of Jesus, this congregation, the body of believers. And I'm glad to be a part of a church that makes practical applications, and I want to be faithful, and I want to serve Him, and I look forward to partaking in communion. I think we'll give opportunity for our ministry to step forward.